Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. Let the record reflect that it's 3:30 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stedman, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator Machicki is ill today, so he won't be joining us. I'm expecting Senator Stoltz and Senator Wielkowski shortly. Recording Secretary is Ann Kreckelberg. We've got Thatcher helping us on the audio. My aide, Ikey, is staffing the committee today. The A-team is here. I want to remind folks to silence your cell phones, please. Today we will hear from the Alaska LNG Project in the second portion of those statutory updates that Senate Bill 138 directed to occur on a quarterly basis. We heard from Steve Budd about the update on the project itself. Today we'll hear an update about gas production, commercial, fiscal, regulatory terms, and the external affairs and governmental relations units. We'll then hear from one of our deputy commissioners of natural resources and revenue, Marty Rutherford and Donna Keppers, on how the state gas team is progressing. I want to welcome Senator Wielkowski and Senator Stoltz joining the committee. So welcome.
Madam Chair. I was only delayed because I was talking with some very engaging nurses about their priorities.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. All right, so first up, we have the Alaska LNG project, and we've got seats up here for the five folks that are going to take us through the first PowerPoint. So I think, I'm not sure, but I think Mr. McMahon, Mr. Van Tile, Mr. Mesnich, and Mr. Lee are coming forward. And am I missing someone? Oh, Mr. Fowski. Oh, pardon me. Sorry.
So missable.
Who is that guy anyway? So, gentlemen, welcome. Just a refresher, I know you've testified before this committee, but when you speak, if you would identify yourself and your affiliation, please, that helps the recording and the folks that are online listening in. So, I'll turn it over to you. You probably have a plan for who starts in the order.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon about the Alaska LNG project and our progress, and yes, we do have a plan. What I was hoping to do was introduce myself, offer a few brief comments, and do the same for each of the members, and then we'll have prepared remarks offered by Mr. McMahon.
Very good.
Okay. For the record, my name is David Van Tile, and I am regional manager for BP here in Alaska. I've been working for BP in Alaska for over 30 years, the last half of which has been dedicated to working to get Alaska's gas to market. And now I have the privilege of working in my current role on the joint fiscal team and on the management committee of the Alaska LNG project. And today we have the right parties aligned on a way to collectively advance the project. And that was true last February when we testified before this committee, and it remains true today. Make no mistake, we have a lot of work remaining to be done, but the and you'll hear about the nature of that work both on the project team and the other supporting efforts in the comments to come. But we remain on track for a 2016 decision to move the project into the next phase of development, the front-end engineering and design phase, or what we call FEED. The companies before you have all dedicated their resources to meet that challenge, and so has the new administration. We're all now actively engaged on a variety of fronts to continue to progress the project and the associated commercial work that's required to meet that goal. And any one of us, even with our very best efforts working in isolation, can't make this project a success. But all of us working together cooperatively can. And last year, we started on that journey together, and we've taken some very important and very successful steps along the way. Last year, this body passed SB 138 by an overwhelming majority. We've entered into an agreement to begin the current pre-FEED phase. We filed for a DOE export license application. We initiated the FERC pre-filing process. The project has momentum, and we look forward to continuing this journey together and to working with you in the coming weeks and months as we see the future of Alaska LNG continue to unfold. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ventile. Quick question. I hope, well, you tell me, can we interrupt you as you go through this and ask questions?
Madam Chair, absolutely.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity today. For the record, my name is Darren Mesnerich. I am the ConocoPhillips Integration Manager for Alaska LNG. I've been with the company for 25 years, and I currently live in Anchorage. I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be part of this significant project, which is so important for all the participants, including the state. I appreciate Dave's comments and endorse them. I'd like to build on them. ConocoPhillips, we see two key steps in front of us before that FEED decision. First, commercial, and then fiscal. First, we are building a commercial foundation for the project, in particular completing two key agreements, the gas supply and the governance agreements. Only after the commercial foundation is in place would we recommend the administration and the legislature consider implementing that second step, which is the finalization of the fiscal legislation package. Then, with the commercial and the fiscal foundations in place and the completion of the technical pre-FEED work, would we expect to have the information necessary to make a FEED decision. When we refer to a gas supply agreement, we're just talking about matching our share of cash investment with the share of gas or LNG that we get out of the project. ConocoPhillips, like everyone else, expects to be making a cash investment based upon our gas percentage share to the project. Once we make that investment, we need to be sure that we can deliver that share of gas to the project on a day-to-day basis. And likewise, that we have the ability to get that same share of gas or LNG from the project on a day-to-day basis. It's a relatively simple concept. Our investment share equals our gas throughput, equals our product offtake share out the back end, but it requires working through some details and getting it right. When we talk about governance agreements, you might also call those the venture agreements. These are things where you're setting up the business, like how you share the costs or what are your voting rights, who's in charge of what, and how long do we have to pay the bills, and all those kinds of details. We'll discuss some of these more in the presentation that Bill's going to walk us through. As we sit here today, the commercial agreements are not complete. The fiscal package that would come to the legislature is also not complete. But we are working very hard to meet the schedule in front of us. I believe we all want to find a way to make this project successful. And again, we are working very well together. Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today. I'll be happy to answer any questions along with my colleagues after the testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill McMahon, and I work for ExxonMobil. I appreciate the opportunity to provide you with an update on the Alaska LNG project today and look forward to your questions as well. I'm a senior commercial advisor and have more than 32 years of experience in the industry. My last 22 years have been spent on advancing Alaska gas commercialization. Alaska has been and continues to be an important part of the worldwide portfolio of ExxonMobil, and we're encouraged by the progress that we've seen on Alaska LNG as described by Steve Butt back on January the 30th. As Dave mentioned, the signing of the heads-up agreement, the passage of Senate Bill 138, key achievements last year. And since that time, the five parties represented here at the table, as well as the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Revenue, have been actively engaged to work on the things that need to be complete to be able to set us up for a decision to go through the next gate, and that is to enter FEED, front-end engineering and design. And we're targeting to make that decision in 2016. So again, appreciate the opportunity to answer questions and look forward to going through our prepared remarks here in a moment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vincent Lee. Thank you for having me here today. I'm a director of major projects development at TransCanada. I serve as a commercial lead for TransCanada in the Alaska LNG project. In 2014, TransCanada signed a heads-up agreement for the Alaska LNG project with AGDC, the state, and the free producers. At the same time, TransCanada and the state agreed on a memorandum of understanding that established the material terms for TransCare to provide gas treatment and transportation services to the state for the state's share of the gas in the Alaska LNG project. Following the passage of SB 138, TransCare entered into a precedent agreement and an equity option agreement with the state. The precedent agreement formalized the material terms that were agreed in the MOU. The option agreement provides the state an option to acquire up to 40% of TransCare ownership interest in the gas treatment plant and pipeline segments of the AK LNG project. As a party to the joint venture agreement for Alaska LNG pre-feed, TransCare has secured highly skilled and experienced pipeline and project management employees into the Alaska LNG project, including the pipeline manager who leads all technical activities for the pipeline segments of the project. TransCare is negotiating with the state administration to reach agreement on the long-term transportation services agreement, which would replace the present agreement. We are working to have the firm transportation services agreement finalized and ready to present to the legislature for review and approval later this year. TransCare is also working diligently with other Alaska LNG participants in advancing the various commercial agreements to prepare for the FEED decision. Thank you, Madam Chair. This concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions as the presentation moves along. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dan Fowsky, President of Alaska Gas Line Development Corp. I was here not too long ago and presented an update on AGDC. A little bit unique in that the state-owned corporation is both involved in the ASAP as well as the AKLNG. At those updates, we report on the progress that's being made and the working groups and the cooperation that's going on with not only the producers and TransCanada, but as well as DNR and DOR. And so today it's nice that we can be here in conjunction with SB 138 and the requirement that a quarterly, or every 90 days, I think it is, report be given. And so you're going to see a lot today that shows the amount of work, the technical side of it, but the progress that's being made. And it's just been, I look forward to this today because it's just verification of the sincerity that I believe is going on and the amount of work that's going forward. And it's been fun to work with. You see the level of people that are involved that I have, that what they refer to, you know, many as 18, they're seasoned professionals that they're from all walks that are coming into this project. And I think it's just very reassuring, and I hope you enjoy the information. I look forward to answering your questions as well. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, for the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. So what we'd like to do today is walk you through a description of how the project is structured and all the work that we have going on to get to this fee decision. And I'll say that we're going to build on what Steve Butt shared with y'all before, but expand on that into areas that are beyond the pre-feed engineering work that's going on here. So I've got a graphic on the screen now, and the first thing I'd like to do is highlight a group that we have called the sponsors. These are representatives from the seven parties that are interested in moving the Alaska LNG project forward. We've got the practice of meeting regularly to facilitate progress in the project. We steward the progress. We talk about issues that the project are facing. And it's all about building alignment. As with any mega project, we're using the industry standard stage gate process where we authorize a set of work. Right now we're in pre-feed, pre-front-end engineering and design. And we're driving through that work to the next stage gate. And that's the big decision next year to enter feed. And that's a major decision involving more than $1 billion of spend to the next gate. And so it's all about driving alignment so that when we get to that decision, we can get thumbs up from all the sponsors to move to the next phase. This sponsor group is concerned with all aspects of the project, so we're going to talk about the breadth of concern with this. So, but first what we'll do is we'll just go through each of the entities or groups that have been formed to help move the project forward. And I'll have to say, we're trying to make this simple and easy to understand, but as we said it from the outset, stop and ask us questions because we want to clearly communicate. So on this next chart, slide 3, I have the sponsor group depicted at the top. Again, the 7 parties that are involved with that. In the middle, we have the joint venture parties. These are the 5 entities that are doing the project pre-FEED work. This is the work that Steve Budd is involved with. And this is also the group that has filed the FERC applications to get the process going that's going to result in the EIS that will allow the construction permits to be issued for this project. Then we have another organization at the bottom of the page, and you'll note that it has LLC at the end. So it's a legal entity called the Alaska LNG Project LLC. Last year, we found that we needed to file our applications with the DOE, the Department of Energy, to start the process to get export licenses. And we needed to have a legal entity to file that application. And so affiliates of ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips form the LLC and put that application in. And we'll talk more about where that is when we get to a future slide. I'll highlight the footnote here is that this application would also cover any potential state royalty in kind or production taxes gas, or TAG as we like to call it. And so we have a future parties box here that if that's the way this venture goes, we would certainly see the state of Alaska having a representative join the LLC so that all the gas can be properly represented in the LLC.
Mr. McMahon, a question. So that potentially could be AGDC, or would it be another private company? What are the possibilities for future parties?
Madam Chair, that is going to be the administration's call on how they do that. We've just simply envisioned that it would be a representative of the state, someone who controlled the gas based on a RIK and TAG election. So, I can't presume what the state will do there. Dan, do you want to add anything?
Through the chair, Dan Fowski. We have had discussions internally with the working group and had some preliminary discussions with our colleagues at DNR and DOR, and I think we're going to come to some type of resolution on this in the near future as to what's the best way to establish and how can the state bring more to bear into this issue in a helpful manner and be a participant in this LLC. So no decision's been made yet, but we are actively talking about it.
Okay. Thank you.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. On to the next slide. What we'll do is we'll just step through each of the groups of members on the sponsor group and talk about what they bring to the party and what interest they're representing. This first group is the state administration, and of course they're representing the state of Alaska in these efforts to progress Alaska LNG. We've got the Department of Natural Resources, and of course they administer, among other matters, the state's royalty and pipeline rights of way. And we've got the Department of Revenue, and they administer the regulation and collection of taxes. And depending on the state's election to take royalty in kind, and a subsequent election by ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips for the state to take its production tax as gas, the TAG, the state could receive about 25% of the resulting gas production. And so the DNR and the DOR would also represent the state's interest as a resource owner, as a potential shipper, and as the sovereign, including the fiscal issues, the security of gas supply. So if the state takes RIK and TAG, they're going to be keenly interested in how they receive gas from Prudhoe Bay and from Point Thompson to flow into the project. And the state has made it clear that they're interested in facilitating expansion of the Alaska LNG project in the future and to ensure third-party access to the facility. So that's a way to highlight the interest of DNR and DOR on the sponsor group.
Another question, Mr. McMahon. So I get the part where the state is in the role of deciding whether to elect royalty in kind or royalty in value. But then this is interesting wording. The election by ExxonMobil, BP, and Conoco for the state to take tag.
Madam Chair, Dave Van Tile with BP. The disposition of the state's royalty gas and production tax was articulated in SB 138. Clearly, the state has a decision to make whether or not it takes its royalty as in value or royalty in kind. If the state makes the decision to take its royalty in kind, then each of the taxpayers would have the right to make an election to pay that obligation that we have of production tax in money or as gas. So subject to the state making an RIK decision, each one of us would have an election to pay our liability of production tax as gas. If you do that, which we would anticipate we do, I can't say definitively that we would because that would be presumptuous since the state has not yet made an RIK election, but then you add those together and that's how you come up with a round number, 25% of the total production accruing to the state.
Thank you.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. So we'll go on to slide five, and for pre-feed, AGDC and TransCanada represent the state of Alaska's infrastructure interest in the project. So AGDC represents the state's ownership interest in the LNG plant, and TransCanada represents the state's ownership interest in the pipeline and the gas treating plant. So on to slide six, we finally end with ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips, and we each hold rights to produce natural gas from the Prudhoe Bay unit and the Point Thompson unit. And as owners of those units, we're working now to commercialize those resources. And of course, as far as representing interest, we represent the interest of our individual companies and our shareholders as well in the effort to commercialize Alaska natural gas. And this includes ownership in the new Alaska LNG project facilities.
Mr. McMahon, what is the breakdown of the ownership of the two units, Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson?
Madam Chair, I'll answer for Point Thompson. ExxonMobil has about 62% of Point Thompson, BP about 30%, ConocoPhillips 5%, and there's a group of minor owners that make up 1 or 2%. And I'm going to pass the Prudhoe Bay question over to Mr. Van Tile.
Madam Chair, Dave Van Tile with BP, who operates the Prudhoe Bay field. Prudhoe Bay is owned by ExxonMobil with a 36%-ish stake, round numbers. ConocoPhillips, similar, 36%. BP, around 26%. And the balance, around just under 2%, is owned by Chevron. 36, 36, 26, 2.
Thank you.
Bill McMahon, for the record, ExxonMobil. Okay, so now that we've highlighted the sponsor group, we're going to go through the areas that the sponsor group are interested in. And so we'll start with one that you're familiar with, which is the Alaska LNG Project Pre-FEED Organization, or the project team, as we like to call them. And so this team is made up of an integrated group of experienced personnel from ExxonMobil, who's the lead, TransCanada, BP, and ConocoPhillips. We're currently in pre-FEED, as we've said, front-end engineering and design. And so this group is all about advancing the engineering for the AK LNG project facilities. We're drafting project execution plans on how to move the personnel and the materials onto site to construct these three main facilities. We're refining the overall cost and the schedules so that they can be put into the economic analysis of the individual parties for the pre-FEED decision. And they're doing the important work, the important technical work that's going to underpin the environmental permitting applications that are going to go in to allow the project to go out and be built. We've also have a cooperation agreement in place with AGDC so that field data that we collect that may be of interest to ASAP can be shared, and field data that ASAP collects can be shared with the Alaska LNG project. And we've got the principle that we'd really like to just pay for data once, and so that's a key bit of coordination that are going on between AGDC and the project. I'll also highlight that there's some legislation that the project team is interested in that the legislature is currently considering called the Parks Right-of-Way Act that would help the project secure pipeline right-of-way through the various parks that we are planning to traverse with the pipeline. And so it wouldn't be a complete presentation without a block diagram talking about the pieces of the project, but we think this will help clarify what's in the project and what's not. And so I'll start at the bottom. Of course, the heart of this project is the LNG plant, currently planned for the Nikiski area. That will include LNG storage tanks as well as a jetty for LNG loading onto the ships. We do have a pipeline of about 800 miles that would go from the LNG plant up to the North Slope, and it would connect to a gas treatment plant. And that is a plant that would condition the gas and get it into the right specifications so that it can be run through the LNG plant. And then we have two transmission lines that will connect the gas treatment plant to both Point Thompson as well as Prudhoe Bay. The Point Thompson transmission line will be about 60 miles. Given the location of the gas treating plant, we'll measure the transmission line to the Prudhoe Bay unit in feet or quarters of a mile. But everything in that dotted red circle is Alaska LNG project facilities as far as the way that we think about this. Now, we will talk here in a minute about what's going on at Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson, because there is important work going on there by those owners to get those fields ready to deliver gas into the AKLNG project.
So a question just for clarification. So these blue blocks, which are part of the AKLNG project, these are pretty expensive pieces of equipment and structures. Are any of these construction costs eligible for reduction of your oil tax liabilities?
Madam Chair, our understanding of Senate Bill 21 and the MAPA system is that as downstream expenditures, these do not qualify for credit or deduction under the production calculations, production tax.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think just for clarity, as I recall, they didn't qualify for capital credits anyway under ACES. Is that not correct?
Senator Sedman, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Senator Walikowski.
Thank you. What any portions of the project would be eligible for tax credits?
Senator Walikowski, through the chair, all the expenditures in this red dotted circle, the blue box, are all downstream investments, and they would not qualify under Senate Bill 21, the MAPA system.
Thank you. Oh, excuse me, Senator Stillman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as we get into this, and we're early in the stage, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of discussion on this because we've had it in the past when we get into royalty in kind, royalty in value, and so on and so forth. But there was a lot of concern previously to the mixing of oil and gas and how we're going to separate them for our tax structure to keep things running smooth, and maybe the presenters could touch on that a little bit as far as what they may perceive as complexities that may need to be addressed, or other issues. And also, Madam Chairman, it would be nice to highlight how Point Thompson and Prudhoe and Kaparik interact, with Prudhoe and Kaparik being more dominated by historically oil, and Point Thompson, assume it's classified as a gas field by AOGCC, how that would interplay if there's any gas from Point Thompson that may come over and repressurize Prudhoe, or if it's all going to be taken right down the line. Some of these areas, I guess, and questions might be just kind of filling in some of the information and areas that we've struggled with or had concerns or interests about over the last several years.
Okay, we'll work that in.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Bill McMahon, for the record, ExxonMobil. So the sponsor group has a broad purview on this project. So they are certainly interested in the project work, and that's the blue box at the top of the page that we just talked about. But there's other work that they're interested in as well. And we'll go through each of these one slide at a time. But there's the gas production into the project. And so, Senator Stedman, I think that'll be a good place to talk about the questions that you have. We also have the commercial agreements that are going to underpin the project as it moves forward and support that FEED decision. We have work on fiscals that's going to be necessary to move into FEED, and so we'll highlight details around that. We've also got our regulatory work with the DOE export license and the FERC process to get an environmental impact statement. So we'll highlight a bit about that. And then we've got our friends in the external affairs and government relations world who are going to be building support for this project as we move forward. And so we'll talk a little bit about them. So this is a bit of a table of contents. And so let's move on to slide 10. And we'll talk about gas production. So preparations are underway right now to commercially produce natural gas from both Point Thompson and Prudhoe Bay. So at Prudhoe Bay, this is going to be a transition. As was pointed out, we've been in decades of oil production, and so we're going to be transitioning from oil production to the simultaneous sale of oil and gas. And so the Prudhoe Bay owners are going to install some new facilities to do that. Now, in the context of this mega project, those may not seem significant in size, but they're essential to allow Prudhoe Bay to produce gas through the project for gas sales. And I'm happy to say that the Point Thompson unit development is on track. And so first production of oil and condensate is expected before May of next year, consistent with the Point Thompson settlement agreement. And this initial development, of course, is focusing in on the producing of gas, the stripping out of liquids, and the reinjection of that gas back into the reservoir. To accommodate deliveries of natural gas into this new LNG project, the Point Thompson owners are going to have to undertake significant natural gas development. Wells are going to have to be drilled. Gas production facilities are going to have to be installed. Gas dehydration, and we'll have to flange up to that transmission line that we talked about in the red dotted circle. So I'll pause here, and think it'd be appropriate to answer some of the questions that Senator Stedman asked. And so I'll pass that to Mr. Van Tile.
Senator Sedman, through the chair, Dave Van Tile with BP again. There are, as my colleague Mr. McMahon mentioned, there are a number of modifications to the current Prudhoe Bay field operations that would be required to accommodate gas sales. And I'll walk through a couple of them for context, and then maybe that might lend itself to a discussion a bit about some of the complexities that represents that you referenced. For instance, we plan to install two gas offtake points at the central gas facility. either one of which would be able to accommodate the entire flow of gas anticipated from Prudhoe to the project. But having redundancy, we thought, given the importance of making sure we have a reliable delivery of Prudhoe gas to the project, was essential. So that would be from the LTS 3 unit, one offtake point, and then from the LTS 1 and 2 unit combined, a separate offtake point. That's one modification upstream that will be required. Those don't exist today. We will also require, as Mr. McMahon mentioned, a metering run that will be required to actually take that gas and measure it before it gets delivered to the transmission line. It could be measured in feet, although it might be several feet, given that you have to have stability of flow to get a reliable meter reading. So that'll be a required new facility. Those are fairly straightforward. We'll also plan to go into each of the gathering centers and flow stations and upgrade the gas dehydration capabilities, either with replacing materials in the current TEG contactors or other modifications, again, just to ensure the on-spec delivery of gas to the project. And those modifications would be actually done at the gathering centers upstream of either the CGF or the central compression plant. So that's another set of modifications. And finally, the anticipation is that those two transmission lines, one taking Prudhoe Bay gas, one taking Point Thompson gas, go into the gas treatment plant. The impurities are removed, CO2, H2S, other impurities, and then we have a nice pure gas stream to be delivered to a pipeline and on-sold to markets. We have that off-gas, the CO2, the acid gas that comes off the GTP, and that will need to be reinjected. We anticipate right now that gets reinjected at Prudhoe Bay. But that gas would include not only Prudhoe Bay unit gas, but also Point Thompson gas. And that will require then an area injection order to be reviewed and authorized by AOGCC. And there's some commercial terms, obviously, that will be required to enable that to happen. That's one example of a complexity that still remains to be worked. Essential to the overall operation of the project. Complicated because of the commercial implication, but doable in the time frame that we're looking at.
And Senator,
question, Mr. Ventile, what you're describing are pretty complex technology, requiring some in-depth knowledge on the part of AOGCC. Is that true? Those commissioners are going to have some pretty substantial background in petroleum engineering, geology, et cetera.
Madam Chair, Dave Ventile with BP. That's correct, and that is AOGCC's remit. And we have talked with AOGCC, and we're prepared in next month to initiate a series of pretty in-depth workshops to set up AOGCC with the information they need to be able to make those determinations.
Thank you.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. Over at Point Thompson, I'll highlight that our current design basis is to put in gas facilities and produce that gas into the Alaska LNG project. There are no current plans to produce that gas and inject it over at Prudhoe Bay. Now, as far as the questions around lease expenditures and their impact on the calculation of production tax, as was the case in the ACES regime and still in the Senate Bill 21, the MAPA system, when the producers calculate their production tax liability, there's an opportunity to deduct lease expenditures as part of those calculations. And so these activities that we've described at Prudhoe Bay as well as Point Thompson are lease expenditures, and we would expect them to be deducted as part of the MAPA calculation. It may be worth asking the administration about their interpretation of MAPA and the calculation of production tax.
Senator Walikowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just going back to AFGCC, do you have confidence in the competence of the AFGCC commissioners to be able to adequately deal with the issues that may arise from this project?
Senator Walikowski, through the chair, Dave Vantile with BP. Yes, we've dealt with AFGCC through the course of our operations at Prudhoe Bay. There, we have found them to be a very, very competent body, and we've had positive engagements and look forward to working with them on this matter.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, it's complicated, especially for people that aren't in the oil industry, like all of us sitting here. You know, I don't know how the math is going to work on the new tax regime versus, you know, the integration of gas, but I suppose the guy shouldn't stick his foot in his mouth too quick, but if you take all those expenditures on gas and throw them against oil, our severance tax is going to be zero or close to it. I don't know. I mean, it would be something that would be nice to look at and see how that works. I'm just not quite sure how that plays out. See, our consultant back there shook his head that I'm full of beans, so that would be good. Because I'd like a positive severance that's on oil. But we'll work that out in the future. I guess it would be nice to have our consultants, when we get that far, Madam Chairman, come in and show us some examples of different price ranges and how this flow goes, our expenditure flows back and forth, to make sure that we've got a system that's stable.
I believe Mr. Mesnerich may have a comment on that.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Darren Mesnerich, for the record, with ConocoPhillips. Just to clarify that, the red dashed circle back on the other drawing, that AKLNG project, the taxes, gas, and the royalty in kind, that's the taxation for that project. So that's the way the taxation is received as it's envisioned in the HOA right now. I don't know if that helps or not.
It does.
Thank you.
Okay, for the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. We'll move on to slide 11. There are a lot of bullets on this slide because there's a lot of commercial work associated with the current activities. We'll start with some activities authorized under Senate Bill 138. The Department of Natural Resources has been given the authority to modify leases in two different areas. One is to address the royalty in kind, royalty in value switching rights that are under the current lease agreements. And what is envisioned there is for the commissioner to consider modifying those rights to be consistent the way that LNG is marketed under long-term contracts. And so that is commercial activity that's envisioned being done leading up to the feed decision. Also, Senate Bill 138 provided for the conversion of certain leases to a fixed percentage. And so, for example, at Point Thompson, we have some sliding scale royalty leases. That's the SSR that you see on the chart there. And so it authorizes the commissioner to work with the Point Thompson owners and decide if the parties can see eye to eye on a fixed percentage that could be used to replace the sliding scale royalty, a way to remove some uncertainty in the project and potentially increase the state's royalty in kind share and therefore the state's ownership in the project. Because you know, one of the truths that we hold here is that we want to have our ownership in the project match our expected gas production into the project. At Point Thompson, there are also net profit share leases that go through a very complex calculation to figure out what additional royalty will be paid based on the profits, quote-unquote, coming from the lease. And so Senate Bill 138 also provides the opportunity to potentially negotiate a fixed percentage to address that portion. And so commercial work is being teed up in that area, applications to be made, and to see if we can see eye to eye on a way to have the commissioner make some lease modifications under 138. Also, the Commissioner of Natural Resources has a decision to make around state royalty in kind. The lease agreements today provide that option for the state, royalty in kind versus royalty in value. As mapped out in our Heads of Agreement of January 2014 and affirmed in Senate Bill 138, we're envisioning the state owning a portion of this project, and a decision around royalty in kind would be consistent with taking gas and then triggering an election by the taxpayers for TAG for an amount of gas that would flow on the state's share of the project. And so another piece of important commercial work that needs to be done. And so ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips are in dialogue with Natural Resources on what we can do to help facilitate that decision.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Maybe for the folks at home, could you explain why they should care if we do royalty in value or royalty in kind, and why it's even an issue? Although sitting here, no, it is, because some of us have spent countless hours in meetings over the last decade on this subject, but why is it such a big deal, and what is how does that impact the sovereign's net income potentially?
For the record, Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil, Senator Stedman, through the chair. We believe that royalty in kind and state ownership in the project are a key enabler for the project, because what it does is it avoids traditional disputes we've had on paying royalty, disputes over the value received for the hydrocarbon when sold into the market, values deducted from that for transportation and shipping. And when the HOA was negotiated and signed, it was viewed by the parties as being a key enabler. As far as the financial impact on the state, we view royalty in kind and royalty in value as equivalent, because they are based on the same thing: selling LNG, deducting costs to ship it, create it, transport it, and clean it. But again, that's more for the administration to say on how they review royalty in kind and royalty in value. Darren, Dave, anything to add?
Madam Chair, for the record, Darren Mesrich with ConocoPhillips. I would just second some of the comments that Bill's made from ConocoPhillips' perspective. The HOA of January 2014 envisioned state participation, and we think that alignment is really key to a successful project. So we go back to that as the roadmap, and we think SB 138 kind of built upon that HOA roadmap, but I do support participation also. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Dave Van Tile with BP, and I guess for the record, I will third it, that the state taking royalty in kind and taking a direct participation in the project encourages all of us then. We all of a sudden commercially look very similar, and so we will tend to respond to questions and issues in a similar way. It creates an alignment that doesn't exist today, which is very important. And as my colleague, Mr. McMahon, mentioned, it also helps to avoid potential disputes in the future with that simplicity of the arrangement. And so we think, as was outlined in the HOA, those are essential elements to the way we envision the project moving forward and big enablers for a successful project. Another element that state participation provides is a strong voice to potential buyers of LNG about host government support for the project, which is usually what one of the things a buyer will ask. And it's an amazing thing to be able to say, well, they're a direct participant in the project with us, which is a strong indicator of host government support. So all those aspects really help underpin a successful project, we believe.
Senator Stedman.
This is a follow-up, and I, you know, some of this stuff is, you've stated numerous times over the last several years, but maybe for this, some of the newer folks that are just watching or some of our newer colleagues that haven't been around this, can you explain briefly that, and I know you can because you've done this numerous times, Mr. Vantile, the net back difference between oil and gas and why we don't structure this as a gas or an oil line instead of a gas line? The tariff difference, potentially?
Representative Stedman, through the chair, that's a loaded question. there are a number of differences. The gas project that we're envisioning here, and we'll talk about it as we get into, as Mr. McMahon gets further into the presentation, I'll touch on it now. One key difference is the manner in which it's regulated. Because LNG projects are typically structured on long-term contractual arrangements between producers and buyers, the regulatory regime is different. The project is going to be regulated under FERC Section 3 of the Natural Gas Act, which provides certain commercial flexibility as to how the actual costs of the project are allocated to different segments, and Bill is going to touch on that in just a few moments. LNG is not typically sold on a spot market. There's a very deep liquid spot market on the oil side, not so on LNG, which again creates a difference in the manner of not only how those commodities are sold, but how those two different sorts of projects would be regulated. Contract versus common carriage on the oil side, where anyone that can bring additional oil onto the system. Those are some differences, oil versus gas. There are many others. And we'll touch on some through the regulatory discussion, and if there's specific ones that you want me to touch on that we don't cover through the rest of the presentation, we'd be happy to address.
Senator Walikowski.
Thank you. Is capital spending for gas-only infrastructure, such as gas feeder lines, gas wells, deductible from the oil production tax?
For the record, Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. If the expenditures are lease expenditures and they qualify, they do go into the calculation of the production tax liability under MAPA. If the expenditures are not lease expenditures or they don't qualify, then they would not be deducted.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Are there any gas-related expenditures being deducted now under the oil tax? And if I could add to that point, Thompson, is that being deducted from the oil tax structure?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil, for the record. I'll speak to Point Thompson, and I'll let Mr. Vantile speak to Prudhoe Bay. At Point Thompson, we do calculate our liabilities for production tax under the Senate Bill 21 MAPA. So the lease expenditures at Point Thompson that do qualify are deducted. Currently we're developing the initial production system for the production of oil and condensate. That's how things are going on at Point Thompson.
Representative Wilkowski, through the chair, Dave Vantile with BP. I would offer a similar response as my colleague, Mr. McMahon. Qualified lease expenditures at Prudhoe Bay are deductible. On the diagram that you saw, anything that's within that circle would not be a qualified lease expenditure. So if you're referring to costs at Prudhoe Bay, if they fall within the dotted line, they're not. And if they're upstream and a lease expenditure, then they would. I'm not aware of any you know, gas project costs at Prudhoe being incurred today. I don't know exactly what you had in mind with the question, but if it's a qualified lease expenditure under 21, then yes, it would be. But I'm not aware of any today.
Yes, Senator Stedman.
Just to add to that a little bit, and again, it gets complicated. I guess the concern earlier I had with that question of the expenditures coming into the oil side was after construction, and you know, this project's up and running, and I can sit down with your tax guys and clarify some of that stuff, minus confusion or what have you, because we know we're very early in this. But I think to the Senator Walkowski's point, it's been difficult for us dealing with the revenue source book, because Point Thompson, whatever's in there, is not been able, we haven't been able to bifurcate that out from Prudhoe and Kaparik. Where several years ago we used to be able to do that. We get a, you know, qualified lease expenditures, and then we get some non-qualified or total expenditures. So it's more difficult on, I think, from our policy side of the table, at least in my opinion, to really get a good feel for what's going on in Prudhoe and Kaparik because of the magnitude of the development in Point Thompson, which is all good. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. But separating that out, so that's something we can work on here over the next several months, so we're all clear and how the system works, and if there's potential difficulties or misalignment in it, that we get things ironed out, you know, sooner than better, or sooner than later, I should say. But it is difficult, Madam Chairman, to not be able to separate out Point Thompson. And we used to be able to, I think, 3 years ago, and then there was a change in ownership, and we haven't had that information delivered to the legislative side. So, frankly, we're clueless on that subject, other than the aggregate number. And it could all be in Point Thompson or all be in Prudhoe. There's no way we can separate the two. And it's not. I'm just saying that we get a lump sum number. It just makes it challenging. So we'll be asking questions sometimes, and you might look at us like, how come you ask such a crazy question? It's because of the economic lens we have to look through, which isn't as clear as we would like. And it leads to sometimes discussions that might sound a little like we're both of us talking about two different sets of numbers sometimes. And I would add, I want to add one quick note. I think Exxon's been very good in their meetings with me over the years, giving me straight answers to the questions. So I don't want the public to think that it's hide the peanut. That is not, it's not the case. It's just the inherent structure of they report, the industry reports monthly, all the companies, and everything gets aggregated up, and then we get one number. So sometimes it's, you know, we looking at totally different numbers.
Thank you. So I want to go back to royalty in kind. So could that decision by the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources be delayed until next year? For you to continue in the negotiations and getting to that fee decision, how critical is that decision to the process?
Yeah, Madam Chair, the fact that it's in this presentation, it's critical to the fee decision that we have in 2016.
Thank you.
For the record, Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil. Back to slide 11. Before we get off of royalty, I'll just highlight one requirement under Senate Bill 138, and that's for there to be individual separate commercial discussions between the state of Alaska and ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips regarding offers to purchase the state of Alaska's share of gas and LNG before the lease modification applications can be approved. And so a key component of 138, you know, and it's driving discussions that go on as we speak to make those offers to the administration. Okay, so let's go on to the other commercial agreements that are going on among the state, AGDC, TransCanada, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips. And you know, the idea is that we need to get these sufficiently complete to underpin fiscal action by the legislature, and also get them sufficiently complete to underpin a fee decision in 2016. We've listed a few of these by example. There's the governance agreement that will control how the venture acts on the long term, and so that's the governance for feed and beyond. There's the gas supply to the project, you know, those important agreements so that the producers, as well as the state of Alaska, will know how gas gets from Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson into the project. There's also going to be agreements on how gas is taken off the pipeline and how LNG is lifted from the tanks and at the jetty onto ships. We also know how important the delivery of energy to the people of Alaska is, and so there'll be agreements around in-state gas. And the administration has made it clear that they are interested that the project be expandable, and that we understand how the project would be expanded. You know, we actually had some terms in the heads of agreement back in January, an appendix that specifically addressed early discussions around that. And of course, there's other agreements as well. But this is just to highlight, there's a large amount of commercial work going on. It's going on in parallel with the other work that we're talking about. And you know, it's critical that we get these sufficiently advanced so that we can act on fiscals and act on the feed decision. And then finally, the last one that I'll have highlighted is of interest to TransCanada. As Mr. Lee mentioned in his opening remarks, there's a long-term firm transportation services agreement, the FTSA, between TransCanada and the state of Alaska that needs to be completed as well.
Mr. McMinn, and this may be for Mr. Lee, there's a time certain on that agreement. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, this is Vincent Lee with TransCanada. The current agreement, the present agreement, have a date, December 31st this year, for the state and TransCanada enter into a long-term firm transportation service agreement. That's correct.
So is there wiggle room in this, Mr. Lee?
Currently, we are working together with the state administration to finalize the firm transportation service agreement. So we, at this point in time, we believe that we will be able to meet the deadline.
Thank you.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. So tall order, a lot of people working on the commercial work for AKLNG. On to slide 12. Talk about fiscals. So given the unprecedented scale, complexity, and cost of the Alaska LNG project and the need to compete in global energy markets, a competitive, predictable, and durable fiscal environment is required. Establishing these fiscal terms is a key enabler for the LNG project, and it's also important for the LNG buyers, our potential lenders, and investors. And so I'll highlight that again, that this idea of getting predictable and durable fiscal terms is a broad support for this project. It's going to support those that invest in the project, including the state of Alaska. It's going to support those who might lend money to the project to have it built, and those who are going to be signing those long-term LNG purchase contracts to buy LNG from the project. So during 2014, we made good progress toward this goal with the heads of agreement in Senate Bill 138. And you know, along with the election of royalty in kind and setting up state participation, you know, all this work that we're doing in fiscals is important to enabling the project. Something that ExxonMobil, BP, ConocoPhillips, and the administration, as well as the legislature, will need to consider is, what are the different options to provide predictable and durable fiscal terms for the LNG project? And so discussions are underway with the administration, and so you know, we hope to involve the legislature in the right time on that as well. We're also eager to work with the administration and the legislature on ideas related to property tax and the payments during construction. We're keen to see the work products coming out of the Municipal Advisory Gas Project Review Board, because those are going to be important to coming up with lasting solutions to property tax. And of course, legislative review and approval will be necessary to any changes to the property tax system that might support a fee decision. So another important line of work around fiscals.
Senator Stedman had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just thinking back on the regulatory, I'm sorry I didn't ask this in the proper sequence, but is Point Thompson, from AOGC's current regulatory viewpoint, is it an oil field or a gas field? And if it's if they view it as an oil field, when does that discussion take place? And if it's a gas field, I guess it's, how do they deal with any potential oil issues? Or maybe you can spin us up just lightly on that. It's probably a better question for them at some point when they come here. But
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil, Senator Stedman through the chair. We are in active discussions with the AOGCC as we speak. With the initial production system coming online early next year, we'll need field rules around that that operation to produce condensate and oil. And then we're also, at the same time, having discussions about having gas offtake authorizations to support the Alaska LNG project. And so those very questions that you have raised are the topics of the discussions that we're having with the AOGCC now. And so, you know, we hope to have authorizations to produce condensate early next year, as well as having authorizations to produce gas to go into the project.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wielkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, we're currently, the state of Alaska is currently paying out $100 million more in tax credits than we're receiving in revenue in our, through our property tax, our production taxes, and next year it's expected to go to $400 million or more. We've got a $3.5 billion deficit this year, billions of dollars in deficit for years to come. Should we be expecting that you'll be coming and requesting more tax cuts from the legislature for oil and gas?
Senator Wielkowski, through the chair, Dave Vantile with BP. The fiscal discussions that we're having right now with the administration are focused on identifying the terms necessary to make the Alaska LNG project a success. The current environment that we're experiencing, we expect to be look very different in 10 years' time, when we'd be looking at a first gas from the project in that sort of time frame. So what we're focused on is what's going to be required to make the project a success. We believe that the modifications that were made in SB 21, ratified by the legislature, affirmed by the people by election last year, are doing the things that they need to do. We're seeing increased activity and increased production. And we don't control oil price. We're price takers, not price makers. And the problem that we have, that we're facing with revenue, is a common one. We also, we receive 100% of our revenues from oil and gas production. The problem is with oil price and not with the tax regime.
Yes, Mr. Mizert.
Through the chair, Senator Wielkowski, Darren Mesnerich with ConocoPhillips. For the record, I would just like to second Dave's comments. We believe the HOA lays out a good roadmap for the project to enable it, and the SB 21 legislation and SB 138, we believe, are the right steps to enable the project. So we think that's the right environment for a long-term success. Thank you.
Senator Wielkowski.
Well, I take that as a no. No, you're not requesting any tax concessions, or you won't be.
Yeah, we have no, through the chair, Senator Wielkowski, Darren Mesnerich again, ConocoPhillips, we have no plans to request oil tax reductions.
Could I ask a question about what is in the term sheets that I believe you will be negotiating in this time frame before 2016. Are they some of these elements you've been talking about in the fiscal and commercial pieces?
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. Term sheets are a tool that commercial negotiators use to work through a complicated agreement. And so what we do is use those to exchange ideas, to document where we have agreement, to drive resolution on open issues. And so when we use the word term sheet, it's a tool that negotiators use. And so rather than exchange multi-paged text back and forth to try to resolve something, we use shorthand language and tables called term sheets to help drive that. And so I will say that everything that we talked about on the commercial page and everything we've talked about on the fiscal page lends itself to the use of term sheets to help drive those. And once you can stack hands that you have agreement on the term sheet, then you can go and draft the actual definitive language that would go into the agreement with confidence because you know you have the essence of the deal.
Thank you. All right.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. Before I leave the fiscal page, we often get the question asked, what do we mean by predictable terms, durable terms, and balanced terms? And so I'll just pause here and say that you know, when we think of the word predictable, we think that the state take, for example, royalty and taxes, are calculated in a way that's consistent and is unambiguous as possible. As far as durable, these terms that are agreed would be lasting for a period of time commensurate with the risk being taken. And then as far as balanced, you know, the idea is that the state, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips revenue share is clearly defined, and they're defined in a way that improves the probability that a commercially viable project will be achieved. So at its fundamental level, the Alaska LNG project is a world-scale project, and so all the investors, including the state of Alaska, needs to understand the investment structure and the commercial terms before proceeding. And these terms also need to recognize the risk and the balance of the needs of the state, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips. So on slide 13. So the regulatory work that's going on that the sponsors are keen to steward fall into two categories. We've got the DOE export permits that got the applications that got filed last year, and I'm happy to report that we have already received our export permit for export to free trade agreement countries or FTA countries, and deliberations are continuing in the Department of Energy for a permit for export to non-FTA countries. And so as we say on the slide here, we believe that the full authorizations are on track, and those will be key enablers for our fee decision next year.
Excuse me, Senator Sidman had a question.
Maybe could you expand on that a little bit, the free trade, which countries are sitting in the Pacific Basin? I assume that's the target market. And then the non-free trade ones, and you have to specify which ones on the non-free trade, or do they give you a blanket go anywhere on the planet?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, Dave Vantile with BP. There are 20 FTA countries that the U.S. government currently has a arrangement with, and I can list them if you like, but in the Pacific Rim, it includes, Korea and Singapore. Includes a number of South American countries, Middle Eastern countries, but as far as the Pacific Rim, it includes Korea and Singapore. If you like, I could go through the list. I don't know if that's helpful.
Madam Chair, if I could, just to highlight, it's, you know, Japan and the Philippines, and then you know, as far as some of the major targets, and then do you have to specify the countries in this permit? It's kind of a basic question. But
Senator Sedman, through the chair, the FTA countries do not include Japan, the Philippines, Malaysia, China, some big consumers of gas in the Far East. It does include Korea. It does include Singapore. The a non-FTA country, those, I'm not an expert in the matter, but my understanding is that they are country-specific. And so, and I know the U.S. government is in active discussions with a number of countries to see if that status can change. But right now, there are 20, includes Korea, doesn't include Japan, doesn't include China or other major Pacific importers of LNG.
Follow-up, Senator Sedman?
Yes, Madam Chairman. And could you give us maybe just a feel for how long you expect that to take place? Is this a potential roadblock if they don't allow Japan, China? I'm sure South Korea can only take so much. I'm just
Through the chair, Senator Sedman, Darren Mesrich with ConocoPhillips. The schedule or the timeline that we see now, maybe towards the end of the year, that's consistent with other recent activity. When Kenai LNG got its license, its export authorizations, they were within a year, so sometime towards the later part of the year. But in informal meetings, we've had strong support with the when we've engaged with the DOE, so we believe we're on track.
Very good.
Okay. Bill McMahon, for the record, with ExxonMobil. The other key regulatory activity is interactions with FERC. We're currently in the NEPA pre-file process, and this sets the foundation for the environmental impact statement, the EIS, that's going to allow the FERC to issue permission to start constructing the project. And so we're in the pre-file process that allows us to interact on a preliminary basis with the regulator so that we can build a higher quality formal application that will go in and increase the chance of success. So the key part of that that application are 12 resource reports. And we have filed our first draft with FERC this month. It's over 9,000 pages on the FERC website. It took us a day, 3.5 days to upload all the PDF files to their website, and it's a first draft of these resource reports, and they're a skeleton at this point. And so what's going to happen is the FERC and their contractor are going to be following the skeleton and going out and talking to different communities, different groups, different stakeholders to get their input on understanding the impacts of the project. And So we'll be able to take that information and file another draft report. And with two draft resource reports under our belt, we would be able to file a very good final submission that has good stakeholder engagement, which is a key measure of the quality of an EIS. And so there's going to be numerous opportunities for the people of Alaska, for the community leaders in Alaska, to input into this process, and so we're looking forward to supporting that from a project standpoint. On to slide 14, external affairs and government relations. So, in short, this line of work is all about facilitating public dialogue about the Alaska LNG project. And so we'll be reaching out to federal, state, municipal, and tribal governments, including agencies and legislative bodies. And in an effort to reach all stakeholders, there will be special initiatives to target different stakeholder groups. And so, the bottom line here is a project of this magnitude and complexity cannot succeed without broad support. And so one of the things we'll be looking for when we're entering our fee decision is that support being built? Is there broad support for this project? So So this brings us to our last slide in the presentation. And so what we've done is we've reprised the six boxes that we've just gone through, put some headlines here as far as what are the hard deliverables coming out of those different initiatives, deliverables that are going to be needed to support the 2016 FEED decision. So that'll be pre-FEED project deliverables coming out of the project team. It'll be development plans at Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson, as well as AOGCC gas offtakes coming out of the gas production line of work. We've talked about the key agreements that are going to be necessary for the commercial underpinning, the fiscal work around property tax, royalty in kind and predictable and durable terms, the DOE export license and progress on the NEPA process with FERC, and then finally this broad support that we just talked about. And so I'd like to close with some comments around timeline. The people at this table, as well as the administration, are all targeting a FEED decision in the second quarter of next year, and we've all resourced these initiatives accordingly. Consistent with Senate Bill 138, we're planning for a 90-day public review period prior to formal legislative review, and we recognize that certain agreements that are going to be signed by the state require approval by the legislature, and we'll need to go through this process. But I'll temper this with, you know, given the magnitude of the FEED decision for each party, as I mentioned, this decision represents more than $1 billion of commitment, which is bigger than some projects are, but this is just the front-end engineering and design. You know, it's essential that we take the time to satisfactorily complete all the deliverables. And we've talked about the stage gate process and the way that excellent companies manage projects. And so, you know, one of the truths that we hold is, you know, if you become schedule driven, you start making mistakes. So we want to have targets, we want to have goals to drive progress, but we also want to have quality deliverables to drive the decision that we face early next year. So that's the end of our prepared remarks. I'll see if anyone here at the table want to make any comments before we turn it over to questions. Thank you.
Well, I had a question for Mr. Pawlowski about AGDC. So let's say that we actually get to a project. Would AGDC's role be in marketing our gas? What would your role be?
Madam Chairman, Dan Pawlowski for the record. It could at some point. If you're talking about end of the project, if we're heavily involved in, say, the liquefaction side, there'd be more. There'd certainly be marketing, currently underway. I think discussions with DNR and how the state plans to set those arrangements up individually with the producers. But from an engineering standpoint, that's a massive project, $23 to $25 billion. I think 20 times the size of the current plant in Nikiski. So we would be quite busy, I would assume, on monitoring that process on behalf of the states representing their equity share on that project. But there certainly could be marketing. There's certainly going to be a lot of work in regards to that. AGDC also has the role under SB 138 of offtake. And so that's going to be a major piece of figuring out and working with everyone involved, the producers and the companies have no involvement in the valves or the flanges will be placed there, but that's not the responsibility of the project after that. But it does fall towards AGDC to be working by the directives of the bill to be, do the pre-engineering and be determining where those should be or, and what type. There's also discussions on possibly intake valves now with potential for others that might want to. So there's a wide array of events that we could be involved in. Did that answer your question?
It does. Thank you. I do want to make note that Senator Huggins has joined us, as well as Mayor Navarre. So welcome, gentlemen. Senator Wadakowski.
Thank you. On the timeline issue, you note that it's essential that time be taken to satisfactorily complete all deliverables.
is it reasonable to expect an October special session, or if the parties aren't ready, is it okay to push that off?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. You know, we're driving all these deliverables forward as fast as we can. There's a possibility that they could be ready in time for action, you know, at the end of this year. But we're just trying to temper that with the recognition that we have to have a quality product to have people be able to make the decisions, both the legislature as well as the potential investors. So, you know, I'm not in a position to say one way or the other.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, Dave Vantile with BP. Another element to bear in mind on the timeline issue is not all elements on here are fully within our direct control, in that there is, as my colleague mentioned, the for instance, the MAG process, which is running its course, doing very good work, very actively engaged with the administration on defining what works for the municipalities, and we need that to run its course and certainly inform where we get to on the fiscal arrangements. We're hopeful that can be done in a real timely fashion, but you can never, whether it's that property tax item or any other item, you can't force parties to agree. Or if you do, you can get into some bad places. And I think that's what we're saying when we say we need to make sure we have quality deliverables where folks have had a chance to fully investigate the issues before we bring them forward to the legislature. We're hopeful we can do that in a very timely fashion. What we do know is we want to get to a fee decision in second quarter 2016. And as soon as we can get items ticked off our list and done and ready to go, you know, we'll certainly be back. But we can't force that to happen on any particular time frame.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you so much, gentlemen. Very informative. I appreciate you being here. Thank you. I'll let you take your seats there. I also want to note that Commissioner Hoffbeck has been with us as well during this, so thank you very much, Commissioner. Next, we have up Deputy Commissioner Rutherford and Donna Keppers from the Department of Revenue. So I'll invite you to the table. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members.
I think Commissioner Hoffbeck is also coming forward. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here today, and for the record, my name is Marty Rutherford. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources, and I'm also the administration's lead on the AKLNG project. I would like to start by just noting that I started working back at Department of Natural Resources on December the 1st, and by December the 2nd, the Gasoline team was beginning to brief me on what was then non-confidential information. That began a very intense effort that included, once Commissioner Hoffbeck and Commissioner Myers and the Attorney General were available, to begin to brief them on the non-confidential aspects. Shortly after I joined DNR again, I was allowed by the administration to sign the seven-party confidentiality agreement. So then I, along with certain members of the existing AKLNG team within the administration, began to receive very in-depth confidential briefings. One of the things that I've been impressed with about coming back to the Gasoline project is not only the structure that has been made available to the state through SB 138 and the HOA, was also the quality of the people involved in the leadership team. And we have retained that leadership, that technical team, in the form of five individuals that work directly within Department of Natural Resources, some of them as employees, some of them as contractors. But I noted back in November 2014, when the previous administration briefed the legislature, they identified those players, and I'd just like to reiterate their names. They are Steve Wright, David DeGruyter, Steve Swaffield, Audie Setters, and then Black & Veatch is also under contract to DNR. Department of Law has retained maintained the contract with Greenberg Traurig. Department of Revenue has maintained their contract with Gaffney Klein. And, of course, the various agencies, Law, Revenue, and DNR also continue to commit significant resources from within the agencies. Within DNR, it's particularly within the Division of Oil and Gas. This administration also continues to keep the same principles that were put into place by the previous administration, and those are to continue to prioritize the state's interests, to protect the state's interests, to identify the full spectrum of opportunities and benefits and risks and costs associated with this project, and not only to identify them, but to assess them and to take steps to address them through commercial arrangements that protect the state interests. Additionally, all the parties are continuing to progress this project under the framework of SB 138 and the Heads of Agreement, and we're moving forward on all the commercial agreements, and that will allow us to make that very significant FEED decision in this early second quarter of 2016. This work's being accomplished as the producer parties indicated a few minutes ago through various groups. They include the fiscals, the upstream, the finance, the governance, domestic gas or in-state gas supply, the gas supply agreements that are necessary to protect a lot of the state's interest if we choose to take RIK. And of course, DOR, working with Lazard, is looking at their financing options that will be made available, of course, to the legislature. And finally, what's probably also very significant to everyone to understand is that while many of us were on a fairly steep learning curve coming back into this project discussion and continue to be on a steep learning curve, the members of the teams continued to have meetings regularly during the last month and continue to progress the technical discussions and the elements of the commercial agreement so that everybody is working towards alignment. For just as a note, our next steps are, in fact, many of the commercial agreements, gas supply and balancing, the offtake, expansion and access, domestic gas, in-state gas, access to domestic gas, LNG disposition, marketing, obviously the RIK decision and the lease modifications that were also mentioned that are associated with net profit share leases and sliding scale leases and the associated lease provision with switching and of course the financing. Additionally, there are several organizational issues that we're having to deal with, and that includes the ultimate operating model for the project that not only affects the producer companies, but will affect the state of Alaska and what that looks like in its entirety and the governance aspects of that model and what a JV might look like as we progress into FEED. And obviously, we're looking very significantly at the mechanisms that might be available to the state for providing some certainty, some durability to the various elements of the fiscal regime. And obviously some of that was identified within SB 138, specifically as discussed, the 13% production tax as gas, and whatever is the actual defined royalty in kind, should the state choose to take its royalty in kind, which will not be a flat 12.5% because of some deviations over at the Point Thompson unit. And with that, I'm going to ask Donna Keppers if she wants to add anything to this little dialogue, and then, of course, we're available to answer any questions, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Good afternoon. My name is Donna Keppers. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Revenue, and I was part of the transition team from the prior year where we started under the previous administration. I came to the state of Alaska in 2008 as an audit master within the tax division, and have had the opportunity to work under several leadership roles under that administration and during that time. And previous to that, I spent approximately 9 years with Alyeska Pipeline Service Company in various leadership roles, commercial and accounting, and then transferred over and went to work for, prior to that, Matco Alaska Petroleum. The second 9 years with Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. So just had a really rich experience here in Alaska prior to coming to state government. I was part of the AKLNG project under the previous administration, working with governance and operating model and, you know, the tax implications. And then in December, became the deputy commissioner and have now been exposed and had just relations across all the areas of the project. And the Department of Revenue, as Deputy Commissioner Rutherford stated, is we're a highly integrated group because we've got state gas team members that are embedded in all of those areas of fiscals governance. And we are pretty much in lockstep with DNR and AGDC in several of these areas. And as she said, we have daily meetings, weekly meetings that are internal. Then we have the integrated meetings with the sponsor parties to connect. And it's moving rapidly. It has been. So we're all fully engaged and continuing at a pretty steady pace as we all move forward. A couple of the major areas for the Department of Revenue are, of course, the next phase of the financing alternative work with Lazard and First Southwest. And that will start here, you know, fairly soon in order to actually do the further analysis in order to generate a report toward in the fall. The other piece of work that we are fully engaged in deals with the MAG board and just helping the board work through and get to consensus on a mechanism. And we are feeling good about the progress that's been made with the board. And we have Commissioner Hoff back here to actually give a little bit more detail about where we're going and what we're about to do. So
great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. There's been some concern about the MAG group and how it's fitting into the process and whether it's going to be timely in its decision. The MAG group is actually meeting on Friday in Anchorage to consider PILT structure to be introduced into the economics of the project. When I first came on board, and I think you could see it within the structure of the report that they provided, with the transition administration, I think the report lost a little focus. That's not a slam on anybody that was involved in it. It's just they were uncertain about who was coming in and how they would react. So it became almost a wish list instead of a good plan. So we reengaged with the MAG group. They committed to the fact that the PILT structure is an acceptable structure moving forward, but that PILT itself was too generic of a concept to deal with. So they asked the Department of Revenue to put structure around the PILT. We have done that, and we will present that to the MAG group on Friday. With the hopes that with consensus we can move that forward into the more of the discussions on the greater fiscals for the project.
Great, excellent. Any questions, committee members? Seeing none. Did you have anything, Senator Coghill?
I was grateful to hear that.
Yes.
I was probably vocally critical about that very issue, so that was good to know.
And just kudos to the mayors and the municipal representatives. They've been very open to the process and the idea of just what a project economics look like as a general idea, and the fact that they've been willing to participate in the discussion.
Very encouraging. Equally encouraging, Deputy Commissioner, your report, Deputy Commissioner Rutherford, about the progress being made and the you seem to be expressing positive feelings toward the plan as it's been laid out and just continuing to move forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that is exactly how I and the entire administration feel. We think that there's the device that was structured in 138 is very workable. It allows us to resolve conflicts between the various parties and what motivates their interests and protections. And I'm feeling like everyone is working together to identify resolution as issues or problems arise. I mean, there's really a sense of teamwork.
Wonderful to hear. Senator Coghill.
So the other thing I've been critical about, but first of all, I'm really relieved to hear a lot of the working together that we just didn't get to see as a legislature. But what we do see as a legislature is several members on the AGDC board not being appointed yet, and that is going to be the same problem you have. There's people now going to have to come up to speed on something that has traveled along, and I don't know, I don't think it's up to you, but it's a concern that we have, and I've been vocally critical on that point. So is there anything that you can tell us, or how should we look to you on that?
Madam Chairman, Marty Rutherford, DNR. I was wondering if Dan Foskey from AGDC wanted to add anything here. If not, I can probably add a little bit.
Madam Chair, Senator Coghill, Dan Foskey again. Excuse me. I have not been made privy to members other than the announcements that we hear that there's some action going to be taken. I would like to point out that aside from some of the concerns that people had over the action, but the corporation's doing fine. We have a board. We've got four members. We've held one board meeting. It went very well. And so the activities of the corporation are fine. I certainly look forward to board members being announced, but I didn't want folks to think that we were dead in the water and not producing or functioning. We are, and it's going quite well. And I think in the very near future that this issue, you know, according to the governor's announcements, will be taken care of. So we're fine on that end.
Great. We're looking forward to that.
And it goes under the category that I heard earlier, all hands on deck. And I think this is one of the things that we just need to get going. And so we're anxious. Of course, we see, like you do, budget cycles come and go. We're not interested in hurrying a project by stumbling over ourselves. On the other hand, if all hands need to be on deck, this is something we've got to do.
Great. Any further questions from the committee? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Foskey, and Ms. Keppers. Thank you so much for being here today. Well, that completes our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be Friday, February 20th. We will resume with public testimony on Dr. Roland Ma's appointment to the Board of Fisheries and SJR 13 after that. The meeting is adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:12 p.m.